An Osho Talk. Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt, number 5.
Tozan asked a monk, "What is the most miserable condition in the world?" "Hell is the most miserable," answered the monk. "No," said Tozan, "what is the most miserable is to wear this robe without understanding the great matter." Then, addressing all the assembled monks, Tozan said, "The late master, Wu Tzu, one day took a bath, burned incense, sat upright, and said to his disciples, 'The body of reality is perfectly quiescent while giving the appearance of going and coming. The thousand sages are from the same source. Myriad awarenesses are ultimately one. I am now a bubble bursting. What is the use of sadness? Don't trouble your minds. Just maintain complete awareness. If you follow this order, you are really requiting my kindness. If you stubbornly go against what I say, you are not my disciples.'" At that time, Tozan continued, a monk asked Wu Tzu, "Where are you going?" And Wu Tzu said, "Nowhere." The monk said, "Why don't I see?" Wu Tzu replied, "It is not visible to the eye." Relating this incident to his monks, Tozan commented, "Wu Tzu was an adept."
Munissa. Perhaps Zen is the only path that has led thousands of people to the ultimate reality. And in a way that is so simple. There have been arduous ways. There have been self-torturing systems of belief. There are religions which are nothing but moralities, very temporary, having no relationship with the ultimate values of existence. Zen is not a morality. It never talks about right and wrong. It never talks about the saint and the sinner. It is so respectful of reality that nobody in the whole history can be compared to this respect. It is not only respectful to human beings, to this cricket, to these cuckoos, to these crows, wherever life is, the Zen experience is, it is the same life. No categorization. Nobody is lower and higher. Different forms of the abundance of existence. It blossoms in many forms, in many colors. It dances in many ways and in many forms. But hidden behind is the same eternal principle. Zen does not belong to the ordinary category of religions either, because it has no theology, no God. No nonsense questions which have troubled people for centuries. It has reduced the whole religiousness to a single point within you. These anecdotes again and again enforce and reinforce the same point. Remember the ultimate is within you, but it is not within your mind. It is beyond the mind, but within you. Mind is a small corner in you, a small mechanism useful if you understand its ways of working. Otherwise dangerous, because it tends to take possession of you, becomes the master, and leads you into thousands of ways of power, money, prestige. And you are lost in a jungle of desires, longings. You live thirsty and you die thirsty, while the source of all fulfillment was within you. Zen cuts every nonsense out. It is 24 karat gold. No mixture that makes it very simple and also very difficult. Difficult because the simple is the most difficult thing in the world to understand. Simple because it does not require you to do anything at all. Just sitting silently, settling within yourself, and you have arrived. To the place which is your home and has been always your home. It is your very being. Remember whatever the anecdote, the basic principle is always pointing to the same thing. Tozan asked a monk, what is the most miserable condition in the world? Of course, the monk could not understand the question. He said, hell is the most miserable. That is a theological answer. And Zen is not a theology. There is no concern about hell or heaven. What Master Tozan is asking is something else. What is the most miserable condition in the world? To be confined, to be enclosed, to be imprisoned, to be fettered, to lose your freedom, your joy, your blissfulness. To lose yourself in the mundane and forget the sacred. No, said Tozan, hell is out of question. What is the most miserable is to wear this robe, the robe of a seeker, of a sannyasin, without understanding the great matter. It is very easy to change clothes. The question is transforming your consciousness. That is called in Zen the great matter. Changing the clothes is very ordinary. Anybody can do it. But transforming your consciousness throwing out all darkness from your inner world and making it radiate with the ultimate, with the absolute, time stops. Mind is become just a shadow. You are no more you. You have become the universe. Unless this happens, you are in misery. Then addressing all the assembled monks, Tozan said, the late Master Wu Tzu one day took a bath, burned incense, sat upright, and said to his disciples, the body of reality is perfectly quiescent, while giving the appearance of going and coming. The thousand sages are from the same source, myriad awarenesses are ultimately one. I am now a bubble bursting. What is the use of sadness? He was going to die. He was going to leave this body that he has used up to now. This is his last message to his disciples, that don't become sad. When I am no more, there is no use of being sad. Don't trouble your minds, just maintain complete awareness. If you follow this order, you are really requiting my kindness. If you stubbornly go against this, what I say, you are not my disciples. At that time, Tozan continued, a monk asked Butazu, where are you going? And Butazu said, nowhere. The moment you leave the body, there are two possibilities. Either your consciousness enters into another womb, again becomes imprisoned, or if you are fully aware, you don't enter in another womb. You simply enter into the universal vastness. You become one with the ocean of reality. That's why Butazu said, nowhere. I will not be going anywhere. I will simply disappear as a dewdrop disappears in the morning sun in the ocean. Leaves no address behind. Leaves no footsteps either. Just simply slips silently without making any fuss. And then the whole ocean is the same. Millions of Buddhas have disappeared in the same ocean. But as far as going is concerned, you are not going anywhere. You are going to be here, without a body, in absolute freedom. No confinement, no limits. The whole sky is yours. The monk said, why don't I see? Butazu replied, it is not visible to the eye. The moment consciousness leaves the body, you cannot see it. It is not visible to the eye. But if you are an authentic disciple, your heart is not closed but completely open, you will feel a tremendous energy exploding into the universe. To be close to a master when he is dying is a great experience. Because you know in his death you have touched the eternal. You know that nobody dies. That death has never happened and will never happen. That death is an ignorant standpoint. Awareness spreads all over the existence. The monk said, "Why don't I see?" Vutazu replied, "It is not visible to the eye. You never ask that why I can't see from my nose. Nose has a particular limitation. It can smell. Eyes cannot smell. They have their limitation. They can see. Eyes cannot hear. The most beautiful music is useless unless you have ears to hear. All your senses are finite, limited. And you don't have any sense which can experience consciousness. Except if you are also conscious enough, then certainly you will see the explosion, the light, the tremendous beauty of an invisible lotus opening its flowers. But for that your ordinary senses will not help. Only awareness, which is not your eyes, which is not your ears, but a totally different dimension inside, being aware. That awareness certainly realizes if somebody is dying, that what is happening. Nobody is dying. Either the energy called soul enters into another body, and it enters into another body if its desires have remained unfulfilled. If it needs another life to attain maturity, if there is greed, lust, anger, anything that demands a body for its expression, it will enter into some womb. But if all is fulfilled, your contentment is absolute, there is no question of entering into another womb. You simply enter into universe itself. Relating this incident to his monks, Tozan commented, "Vutazu was an adept. Adept means a siddha, one who has arrived. Now there is nowhere to go. One has found it which others are searching. The word adept is not right translation. In English there is no word for siddha, just as there is no word for Buddha. Both are two ways of saying the same thing. Buddha means becoming absolutely aware, and siddha means becoming absolutely contented. They happen simultaneously. The word adept is very ordinary. It does not carry the heights and depths of the word siddha. But it is a difficulty to translate from one language to another language, and particularly experiences which are not easy to be brought into words. Now, nobody in the West has ever used the word the awakened one. Neither for Pythagoras, nor for Anagoras, nor for Socrates, nor for Aristotle. Simply that dimension is not opened up. Aristotle is a great rational intellectual. Socrates has the sharpest logic one can conceive. But as far as awareness is concerned, they are as far away as anybody else. They are not Buddhas, and they are not Siddhas. They are neither absolutely content nor absolutely away. They are still functioning in the mind. The West has never gone beyond the mind. It has remained inside the mind and the mechanism of mind. It has never gathered courage to take a step into the unknown. This is the basic difference between the Western and the Eastern approach. The West is continuously trying to improve the mind, refining, sharpening, educating, and the East is doing just the opposite, dropping the mind, finding every possible way to drop it so that the beyond can open, so that you can open your wings. Tozan saying that Butazu was an adept means that he has come to be and he has come to know. He is now no more anybody is needed. Ikkyu has written, our mind without end, without beginning, though it is born, though it dies, the essence of emptiness. Remember the word mind is not the right translation. It should be consciousness, our consciousness, without end, without beginning, though it is born, though it dies, the essence of emptiness, but it remains. It comes and goes, but it never gathers any junk. It remains utterly empty and pure and innocent. The English translators of these poems have invented a way which is not appropriate for our ordinary mind. They use with a small m and with capital M, they translate consciousness, awareness, enlightenment. But it is very dangerous, because the people who are accustomed of reading what mind is will never even bother to look why the M is written in capital and why the M is written in small letters. To them, mind is mind. I would not support this kind of translation. Our consciousness, without end. And without beginning. And remember, it is our consciousness, not mine, not yours. We are one somewhere, deep down. And to find that unity, is the greatest rejoicing there is nothing more ecstatic than to find the point where everything in existence has its roots, the very source. Manisa has asked, need we love enlightenment, the great matter, for enlightenment's sake? Is it enough to love the Master and want more than anything to requite his kindness, Manisha. You cannot love enlightenment. You cannot hate enlightenment. Those are not possibilities of approaching enlightenment. You can be enlightened or not. There is no question of loving enlightenment or not loving enlightenment. And it is not enough to love the Master, because that may become a consolation, that you are with the Master, you love the Master. What else is needed? Loving the Master has only one meaning, that you open up to such a point that the Master can hit and cut like a sword all the barriers of your enlightenment. You will not allow anybody without trust to come too close. To be with a Master simply means defenseless. If he cuts your head, you will be still graceful. And he has to cut much more than your head. He has to cut all your mind activities, he has to cut all your heart feelings. Unless thoughts and feelings disappear, you cannot be absolutely silent. If you love the Master, this is not the end, this is just the beginning of a process. The Master himself is a device. Alone it will be very difficult. But trusting someone whom you can feel that he has arrived, and you can open your heart, there is no fear, because the Master is pure love, not addressed to anybody in particular. Opening to the Master, exposing yourself, not hiding behind thoughts, theories, philosophies, religions, just opening and exposing yourself with all your wounds, with all your darkness, with all your misery, with all your anger, jealousy, just opening yourself without any fear, because a Master never judges. A Master has no judgment. He simply loves. And out of his love, he cuts all the barriers and leaves you alone like a flame. There is nothing to be done. Just your dancing flame is enough gratitude. In your enlightenment, the Master has again become enlightened. Each disciple becomes enlightened, the Master becomes again and again enlightened. The sheer joy of a gardener when each of his plants start blossoming. Just watch his eyes. All those colors, all those dancing flowers in the wind, in the rain, in the sun. And how long he has been waiting. You are my garden. I will wait till you gather courage. The courage means disappearing in the soil. Losing yourself into complete let go. And enlightenment is not somewhere else. It is hiding behind your seat, inside you. Just you have to trust. If you trust even in yourself, the Master is not needed. But because the society has created you in such a way that you cannot trust yourself, you are always divided to do it or not to do it, to be or not to be. Your mind is continuously wavering. You need someone unwavering. It is almost like surgery. You cannot do surgery on yourself. It will be very difficult, almost impossible. You will need someone else and you will have to trust because he is opening your heart or opening your brain and who knows what kind of man he is. But you ordinarily trust even a surgeon whom you do not know. The function of the Master is far more deeper. It needs a very conscious love and trust on the disciple's side. Because he is going to tear down all your personality and settle down all your mind habits to bring out the hidden flame with all its splendor. You don't have to love it. You will rejoice, you will dance, you will sing, you will share, you will love now all that surrounds you. Manisa. Even gratitude is not needed. It comes on its own. With your enlightenment, your gratitude comes on its own accord. The West is absolutely unaware of the fact. Why in the East disciples touch the feet of the Master? One day a man came and wanted to touch Gautam Buddha's feet. And he said, wait, it is not yet time. The man said, what do you mean? Not yet time? Buddha said, your hands are empty. Just wait a little. Unless I can see your hands full of gratitude, but nothing has happened yet in you which will bring gratitude on its own accord, then without any effort, your head wants to touch the feet of your Master, because he has been working without any reward. You cannot pay him. You cannot do anything in answer, in response to all that has happened through him to you. Gratitude is a very helpless awareness that at the most I can touch your feet. When Sariputra became enlightened, one of the great disciples of Gautam Buddha, he does not even touch his feet. He simply touched the dust near his feet. Buddha said, what are you doing? He said, to touch your feet. Seems to be too much. It is enough to touch the dust under your feet. Even an enlightened Sariputra, but he understands also that nothing can be done in return. There is no way to repay it. All that we can do is show our gratitude. Manisa has asked another question. Should not be pointed out to the Shankaracharya of Puri that all this rain has nothing to do with women committing suicide, as he would like them to, but is because you dedicated these discourses to the clouds. His enticement to death and your pouring love on the clouds does not the difference between his attitude and your understanding say it all. Manisa, it is unfortunate that for centuries all the religions have thought in terms of sacrificing, killing men, women, animals, hoping that this way the God will be satisfied. It is such an stupid attitude. Is God? A cannibal, that he will be happy when you sacrifice, and everything has been sacrificed. Even the Hindus who have been fighting continuously that the government should stop cow slaughter. They have been sacrificing cows for centuries before their gods and goddesses. Those gods and goddesses don't eat the meat. Once sacrificed, that meat becomes sacred, and then the Brahmins who are sacrificing it eat it. Nothing to say about cows. The Hindu Vedas mention Narmed Yagnas, in which man was sacrificed. Younger, beautiful, and then eaten. This primitive idea that God will be happy with your sacrificing life, life which is God itself. You are destroying it in order for some fictitious gods who will be sacrificed rather than sacrificing these poor people. There is no relationship at all. Why clouds should come? But the Hindu primitiveness says it in their scriptures that the god of the clouds is Indra and he loves sacrifices. So when you sacrifice, Indra sends clouds to rain. It is unfortunate that even in this century, this old stupid idea is still continues, and it has not worked even once. Nobody bothers that the proofs are there. Gods don't bother about your sacrifices. They don't bother about your prayers, in fact, because they are not. There is no one in the sky to answer your prayers, your sacrifices. The one who is truly divine is within you, and unless you find it, you will not find it in anything else. I can see the clouds as divine. I can see the roses as divine. The universal brotherhood of divine beings. I can see you as Buddhas. You may not accept. You may say, no, not now. I have to go home. Please wait. My daughter is getting ready to be married. My son is graduating and is going to open a shop. Just 2 days more. Let me remain ignorant. I will come to become a Buddha when all other concerns are finished, but those concerns are never finished. Do you conceive a time when you will not have certain concern? When death comes, do you say to the death that, wait, I have to at least close my shop, wait, I have invited a guest, death comes without any concern about your involvements, and the life goes on, nothing disturbed, a little stir, a little dust, and the great wheel of life's chariot goes on moving. If you are so much willing to die when death comes, I am bringing Buddhahood to you. There is no problem. You can be a Buddha and still go back home. That idea is also propounded for centuries, that if you become a Buddha, then what will happen to your wife and your children? Nothing will happen to anybody, anything. Just you will be more loving, more compassionate. Now you will help your children to grow in a new way. Without conditioning them, helping them to remain free so that they can also find the same Buddhahood. The woman you have loved, Buddhahood does not mean that you have to drop loving her. In fact, you have never loved before. It was just so, lukewarm. After Buddhahood, your love will be really overwhelming, not only to your wife, but to anyone who comes close to you will feel suddenly showered with love. Old primitive conditionings are preventing you. Otherwise, there is no need to wait even for a single moment. Anyway, before you become the Buddha, because after that you may not laugh. Buddhas are not supposed to laugh. They simply sit in the lotus posture with closed eyes. No smile, even laughter is too much. So before you become the Buddha, you laugh. Sardar Gurudayal Singh laughed before the joke. Where you are hiding? One tranquil afternoon in the deep forest, Dooby-Doo, the very handsome frog, is preparing to go for a little hop around the pond. He is feeling pretty good about things today and a little out there. So he puts on his fleshy new white Yves Saint Laurent swimsuit. He goes out and takes in the beautiful morning. The sun is streaming softly through the tall pine trees. Dooby-Doo takes a big breath of fresh air and smiles. Then, full of life, he says to a passing-by deer, "I am God." He hopes on a while, and when he comes across a family of dragonflies, he puffs out his chest and says, "I am God." A little further on, he comes to Doreen, the duck. He makes big eyes at her and in a spiritual tone says, "I am God." Doreen looks at the frog and says, "What?" Dooby says again, "I am God. I have been watching you," says Doreen. "And you have been telling that to everyone around the pond. Are you serious, or is it just that fleshy white Yves Saint Laurent swimsuit?" "I am God," says Dooby-Doo again. "Enough of your silliness," says the duck. "Away with you, you smart face jerk." At this, Dooby-Doo pulls down his white swimsuit and exposes his machinery. Doreen looks in amazement and says slowly, are my God. A group of male and female astronauts land on Mars and meet a friendly group of Martians. They chat for a while, and soon the topic of conversation turns to reproduction. One of the Martian couples agrees to demonstrate how it is done on the Mars, and the astronauts look on with interest. The Martians touch tentacles for a moment, and almost immediately a hump grows on the female's front. It grows for a minute and then opens like a flower, and a baby Martian jumps out. Then the Martians want to be shown how it is done on Earth. So two of the astronauts volunteer, lie down on the floor and make love. When the humans have finished, the Martian chief says, "Very unusual, and I must say, very interesting, but where is the baby? Or was the demonstration a failure?" "We don't know yet," replies the astronaut. "If it was successful, then the baby will arrive in 9 months. 9 months," cries the Martian. "Amazing. But if the child won't be born for 9 months, why were you in such a hurry there at the end?" Solomon Einstein owns a nail manufacturing company called Einstein's Nails. Business is very good, so he decides to take a winter vacation in Miami. He leaves his son Matsu to run the business while he is away. One sunny morning, Sally is reading the Miami Tribune at the breakfast when he comes across a full-page color advertisement of Jesus nailed to the cross. Under it is written, "They used Einstein's nails." Sally jumps on the telephone immediately and calls Matsu. "You idiot," screams Solomon, "don't ever say such a thing again." Matsu assures Sally that he understands and not to worry, he will do better the next time. 2 days later, Sally is lounging on the balcony of his deluxe hotel room. Reading the newspaper, he turns the page, he screams and swallows his cigar. There is, in full color, Jesus is lying in a crumpled heap below the cross, and underneath is written, "They should have used only." Gilead Beach. Be silent. Close your eyes. Feel absolutely frozen, no movement. Gather yourself inward. Deeper and deeper. And the home starts coming closer. This silence is so blessed. In this silence, you are all Buddha. It is another matter if you forget it again. Remember it. Remember it. This has nothing to do with what your life work is. It is an inner light which can remain continuously 24 hours like an underground current. And it will change your whole life, its style, its pattern, its approach. Accept this. There is no way to a metamorphosis. Accept this, there is no way to eternity. In this moment, you are beyond life and beyond death. To make it deeper, Nivedana, relax. Let go. Be almost dead. This will help you to go even more deeper into yourself. It is an eternal pilgrimage. This silence This tremendously beautiful moment has stopped happening in the world because people have forgotten to know how to go inwards. They can reach to the moon, but they cannot reach to themselves. Rejoice that you are the fortunate ones who are moving deeper and deeper. This serenity, this blissfulness is your very nature. This is what makes one a Buddha. Nivedana, call all the Buddhas there. Sit down for a few seconds in deep gratitude. This great existence can we celebrate all the Buddhas?